Without trust, society stagnates.
Economies decline.
And businesses fail.
My Security Media believes through security,
trust between individuals,
organisations,
and government can be maintained. Welcome to the
Cybersecurity
Weekly Podcast.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Weekly Podcast, recording in Singapore at the RSA Conference. And proud, given it's an RSA conference, very proud to have the president of RSA, Mr. Rohit Ghai. Thank you for joining us, Rohit.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And alongside the vice president of products, Mr. Grant Geyer.
Thank you for having us.
Gents, look, thank you very much for the opportunity. We were at the media summit yesterday, and Rohit, we'd start with you in terms of the transformation, probably not just of RSA as a company, but the transformation of cybersecurity into a digital risk management approach and having that digital risk management role.
Yep.
One concern might be we're changing the language again from the cybersecurity side to digital, wherever that may end up being. But maybe talk us through how you are viewing RSA now at that senior level, obviously having that strategic approach, digital risk management. Talk us through
So I'll start by saying we're going through two journeys, two transformations, if you will. The first driven by the outside-in sort of market view of why we exist, right? Our mission and purpose. So the why for RSA and the why for the industry, we believe, needs to change from being a cybersecurity orientation, which is secure, defend, to one where you redefine the definition of success and define success not as protecting or defending, but enabling digital transformation, right? Enabling the business objectives of the organization that you serve. We believe the world is going through, at large, is going through a massive transformation, digital transformation. We believe that that's not a buzz phrase. There is something different here in terms of the digital transformation of the world. And in that world, these organizations are not prepared for the level of permeation of digital technologies in their business. And that manifests digital risk. The largest facet of digital risk is cyber risk or cybersecurity related risk. So in order to chart a safe passage of the organizations to their digital future state, the right way to accomplish that, the what of our industry, is digital risk management. So we, RSA, aspire to transform ourselves from being a cybersecurity company to a digital risk management company. And we believe we have the right to play and right to lead, because we have leadership in two domains that we believe are required to serve the business need, the customer need in this area, which is cybersecurity, which is sort of the heritage of RSA, as well as integrated risk management through our RSA Archer product line and our leadership position in that space. So that's one aspect of the transformation that RSA is going through, right? And which is the why we exist and the what we do. The second dimension of our transformation is we believe that in order to earn the right to help organizations with their digital risk management needs, we need to be digital ourselves. So there is an internal transformation that we are going through, whereby we are going through our own digital transformation. We are changing the clock speed of our business in our product line. We're moving to DevOps to reduce the cycle time. We are adopting more cloud technologies ourselves internally for our own purpose. So we're changing the culture. We're changing the technology stack. We're changing our business process to go through our own version of digital transformation.
Well, everyone I talk to that are going through that sort of journey, for want of a better word, but digital transformation becomes a change, even on the technology side, becomes a change management project as well from a whole organisation. Maybe before we go back, we'll come back to culture at RSA and how that might be impacting. But I think to give Grant an opportunity, from what Rohit has said in terms of becoming digital risk management and talking to business, how do you deliver that in a product from a vendor's perspective, still trying to have that sort of business driver aspect to it.
Yeah. The way I think of this is that every organization has to go through some type of digital transformation, whether it's leveraging the cloud or leveraging DevOps or managing their third parties' supply chain. They have to go through these types of transformations to gain a competitive advantage in the marketplace. Yet when you look at how risk has been done historically, it's been done through questionnaires, people-based, qualitative in nature, a periodic, where surveys are done every 3 months if you're lucky. And this is antithetical to being able to manage risk at the clock speed of digital business. So when we think about the kinds of characteristics of a digital risk management strategy, organizations need to now think of, instead of people-driven, data-driven, quantitative, continuous, real-time. Yes, there'll always be some rearward-looking aspect to it, but also predictive in nature. And so if these are the characteristics of what organizations need to manage risk in the digital world, they need to change, and our product strategy needs to change as well.
Is it that easy, though? I mean, I completely agree. Anyone listening would go, yep, got it, that predictive nature, but it's easier said than done, is it not?
Yeah, of course. Of course, right? We have the advantage of having heritage technology stacks, and also the burden of having heritage technology stacks. And so for one example, we are in the process of moving RSA Archer into a SaaS-based platform. We're refactoring the application into a microservice-based architecture so that we can operate at the clock speed of digital business for the platform itself. In addition to that, we're building in new use cases within RSA Archer, one of which we launched earlier this year around third-party security risk management with an OEM partner, such that we can both help organizations assess the risks of their third parties, manage them within RSA Archer, and also in the future be able to manage their whole supply chain online through the cloud. And that's one example. And I think as we look forward, we're going to add, if you looked at RSA Archer historically, it had a set of integrated risk management use cases, such as audit or business continuity. And look, these use cases are as relevant in the future as they were in the past. But if you're going to be a digital vendor, you have to have digital use cases focused on cloud, focused on DevOps. And that, I think, is one of the exciting areas ahead of us, is adding the newer use cases that give us the right to play as a digital vendor.
Well, I suppose the next aspect is, how do you bring your customers along with that, with your products and that product change? Because you can't go too far forward, otherwise you don't have anyone to sell to. How are you managing that aspect of this? We all understand it's happening fast, but some people are moving faster than others. Some aren't ready. You know, where do you find that with your products?
Yeah, I think one of our greatest assets is our customer base. We have a crazy cult following within RSA Archer. And I think the key for us is, as we digitize the RSA Archer portfolio, we have to make sure that we can support the heritage use cases that they need. And also, as leaders in the industry, show them what the path of digitization it looks like. Because, again, part of this change management process is helping show the light to our customers. A lot of our customers, if they are not forward-leaning in terms of what risk will look like in the new world, they're going to be an impediment to the business, and they're going to get left behind. So I think it's change management that we're going through for us, but also change management for our customers. But I think critical to that is taking our customers along on the journey.
Rohit, maybe on that, do you think you have to change the culture of your customers as well? Is there a cultural change, not just internally, but then how your customers are dealing with this digital risk, right? If that's the new term.
Absolutely. I think there absolutely is a culture change that needs to happen on both sides of the equation. I think it would be presumptuous for RSA to think that we can drive the culture change on the other side. I think we can inspire it, we can nudge it, but you know, it's the customer at the end of the day owns it. The good news is what we're seeing in the marketplace is customers are realizing that it's digital or die, and for the sake of their own survival and in order to thrive in the marketplaces they're playing in, they are embracing digital. So the we don't have to convince them that there is a culture change needed. They are self-propelled in that area. And, you know, we are advising them. We are comparing notes, frankly, with them in terms of what we are doing internally, perhaps, and a lot of times learning from them in terms of what we could do better. So it's a symbiotic kind of sort of sharing of our stories and scars and learnings to drive the culture change on either side. One more point to add back to the kind of the, you know, the how do we take customers along on the journey. You know, one of our assets is the customer base, but also the aspect of choice. So as the world goes to digital, as it embraces some of these technologies like cloud, you know, we offer the choice of deployments. So customers that want it, so the customers can move along on that journey at the pace that fits their business needs and their preparedness, cultural and otherwise, to get along on that journey.
I imagine it must put a little bit of pressure on the business side of what you're doing, because you know the SaaS models, you know, it's not so much a box on-prem now. Then you've sold the box, bang, you've got your margin. Now you're kind of understanding that the customer is going to be using those services, but you don't have control anymore. How do you see this playing out over the next few years? It's just a new way of doing business, and as you say, preparing the internal aspect of the business for that change?
It is a new way of doing business, and it does put pressure on the business to offer that choice, right? You have to serve both needs, which is obviously harder. But what is a mitigating factor is we feel that serving both those needs is actually a competitive advantage for us, right? So if you're a born cloud vendor, might say, hey, we serve the cloud-based needs very well. But most of our customers, especially large ones, live in a multi-cloud world. Yeah. They are straddling the two worlds. They're neither all cloud nor all on-premise.
And that's what you predicted at least next few years.
Exactly.
And I think you even said 10 years right here
exactly. I believe for the next 10 years, it continues to be a multi-cloud world, 10 plus years beyond as well, because some use cases, because of, you know, to use sort of Grant's language, the law of physics or the law of economics or law of the land, which is, you know, three reasons to maybe take some use cases and keep them on the ground, because of data sovereignty or latency reasons, et cetera. So there is good reason for some of the infrastructure to stay on the ground, which basically means that, you know, you could argue that forever forward, you'll be in a multi-cloud world. But for the next 10 years, definitely.
You must have that view from being a Dell EMC company, and we first met while you're at Dell. That is obviously the main driver. How much do you take out of the parent company that are selling storage, that are building data centers, and the server market? You see the data centers being built for the next generation. Is that, how much influence does that have, that vision, from a cybersecurity aspect?
Yeah.
Does it make cybersecurity more important?
Great.
Or we don't see that changing, basically. That's my question.
Great question. I would say there is, you know, as with everything, there is two sides to the coin. So I'll talk about the advantages of being part of the Dell Technologies family of companies. You know, with Dell Technologies being, you know, looking to become the essential infrastructure provider for a multi-cloud world, you know, it gives us a lot of learning in terms of what does the multi-cloud journey look like for a lot of customers. Advantage one. Advantage two is we believe that digital risk management and cybersecurity is a team sport. It requires collaboration between IT, security, and risk teams. Security and risk teams cannot win this battle alone. They need the contribution from IT to reduce the attack surface. So being part of an infrastructure company, we are able to influence the infrastructure part of the business to embrace their burden and responsibility to reduce the attack surface, to design security in So there is an internal phrase that is being used within the Dell Technologies families of business, which is intrinsic security. So VMware, as an example, espouses intrinsic security as a key core priority for their business. So they are in the business of not just delivering infrastructure, but resilient infrastructure with intrinsic security, which makes the task of the security and risk teams more, you know, more attainable. So that's the advantage of being part of the family. Now, the other side of the coin is that being part of this large family of business, often, you know, a lot of times we don't get to, you know, we get sort of subjugated, you know, we are a smaller part of the, big gigantic company. And all of that. So sometimes we have to, do interesting things to get the right level of attention, shall we say, right? So it definitely has sort of both sides of the coin. Net, I would say, you know, I would take the advantage part of it, and it gives us some great benefit in the marketplace.
Well, I think to close off, one thing I liked yesterday during the media summit, you are working with, say, Edith Cowan University. In Perth, and building a SOC with them as part of the students, and sort of that getting that groundswell and the skills based addressing that. Maybe just talk us to what you're doing in the educational aspect.
Absolutely.
To address both skills, but also that it's a clever way from a vendor's perspective, I think, to get your tools and product out there. So the young students coming through are already trained,
great,
ready
so maybe
for your
I'll,
clients.
Absolutely. Maybe I'll start and Grant can add to it. Talent is I don't have to convince anybody, talent is a big issue in the cybersecurity market for sure. And through our heritage and our background of emerging out of the academia, right, we know the right way to fix the talent issues at the grassroots level. So we have been working with universities around the globe. We have a very deep relationship with universities in this part of the globe. Something called Academic Alliance, where we are investing in partnerships with universities to build curriculum related to cybersecurity, build out security operation centers, SOCs, with them, and give students a practical experience of learning. So not just theoretical cybersecurity concepts, but actually the experience of actually running a SOC, embracing and practicing what it takes to run a cyber program, so that when they graduate, they are ready to go. And so we are basically reducing the onboarding time for talent. We are actually investing in talent at the grassroots level. And to your point, it's a long game where these students are often familiar with our technology and invested in working with our tools and technology solutions.
And I suppose from our audience, Grant, when you think about a SOC, and whenever I go to an RSA conference, you always have the Security Operations Center sort of set up there so you can have a look and even go inside and start to play around. How daunting or challenging do you think that is? Or from an audience perspective, they get a better understanding of what cybersecurity is and what it's actually doing when they stand in a SOC and have a look at the bells and whistles?
Well, one of the areas that we think is incredibly important, and I think it goes to the skills and talent shortage, is around democratization of security capabilities. One of my favorite customers, I go into their security operations center, and there's this gentleman there named Dragon. Dragon has 6 monitors on his screen, and he's the classic tier 3 analyst. And so one of the questions that I often think about is, why is it that the security community creates so much different ways of analyzing threats and analyzing traffic that there's a requirement to have enough real estate for 6 monitors on someone's desk? And so one of the areas that we've thought about with respect to an example is RSA NetWitness, our security monitoring platform, is to think about how you start with the customer, work backwards, think about the user personas, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 analysts. What is it they need to do to complete their job, and how is it that you can simplify the process of analyzing traffic, analyzing incidents, escalating incidents, such that you don't require the ever burgeoning amount of real estate of monitors and people screen. So when you look at the Security Operations Center, that's really what one of the principles that we're trying to do is democratize, simplify the user experience, and think about the analyst in terms of making their job as simple as possible, given the complexity of the world they deal with. Another example is in the classic RSA Secure ID, people usually think of the plastic tokens. We've transformed that business, and while we still do ship tokens for customers that need it, we've added multi-factor authentication. We've added identity assurance capabilities that are based on various factors of trust, such that somebody won't necessarily need to type in a code or do a touch ID or shake a phone, right? So we think security is most effective when it becomes invisible, right? And so I think a lot of these mental models are really important to help guide the product strategy and help make security as simple as possible for an overtaxed workforce and a workforce that there's not enough talent out there.
Yeah, I think it also communicates and simplifies even for that executive level and board level. Hopefully, if there is any board members and executives listening to this, they should go and walk into their enterprise SOC and get an understanding of what's going on and the activity that's getting tracked. And hopefully, if it's done simply, even the executives will understand and put that into that sort of digital risk and business risk profile as well. Well, look, gents, with closing off, you've been here for a couple of days in Singapore. How's the conference going overall? And I think there's one day to go, right, Rahim?
Absolutely. The conference, it's growing in both the size and the, you know, quantitatively, but also in terms of the demographic of the attendees. We are able to attract not just the technical community, but, policymakers, cybercrime professionals from the ASEAN region. So it had as many facets to it, and each facet continues to grow. And the best news from our perspective is that, we are serving to bring the business community and the security community and the policymakers come together, because this is going to take collaboration to meet our objectives. So again, very delighted with the progress, both quantitatively as well as the quality of the conversation. Many hot topics in terms of data privacy, industrial being in scope, and of course the area of risk management and a risk-based approach to security being the right approach. Yep. So those are some of the top of mind topics.
Well, I think this is your seventh year now.
Seventh year in the region.
And if you get to the San Francisco event, you can see why you're spilling over into regional focus as well. It's almost full house there in San Francisco earlier in the year. And I think even from what we've seen in Singapore just recently, there's a lot of activity here in Asia Pacific and Southeast Asia as well. So good on you for sticking to it for so long.
We enjoy this privileged position to serve as, the phrase I use internally is, we host the biggest cybersecurity party on the planet and people come together. It is one of the most interesting and one of the most vibrant roles that RSA plays in the industry. Yep. So we, as a heritage brand, the first pure play cybersecurity, truly enjoy this responsibility and privilege.
Great. Well, it's been a privilege to be media partners. We were in San Francisco as well. So hopefully we'll get there again for next year. So Rohit Gaya, the president of RSA, and Grant Gaya, thank you very much for joining us on the Cybersecurity Weekly podcast.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers.